Is it an empowering look at one woman's plight to do everything she can to keep her daughter? Or is it about boobs? We watched Striptease from 1996 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme!
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Redeeming Features cast. Yes, I said Redeeming Features cast. This used to be the Rufus Project podcast, but now it's the Redeeming Features cast. Hope that makes sense. Should make sense as it goes along. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend...
Christian Fletcher. Thank you so much, Trevor. And it might have given people a bit of confusion, but we'll work it out. I think movies weren't even in... I don't think we even had talkie films the last time we spoke. It feels like it's been a while, so it's great to be back, no matter what shape or form we're in.
Absolutely. The podcast has been on hiatus a lot longer than I originally planned, and I do apologise for that. Crazy things happened. Crazy things are still happening, so at the moment we're looking at about once a month before we can try to maybe start moving back towards what we were before. And I apologise for the new feed. Couldn't be helped. Things went totally pear-shaped. But if this is the first time you've listened to this podcast and you're very, very confused, the point of Redeeming Features is we take a movie with less than stellar performance, profits, or reviews and see if we can redeem it. So it's all in the title now there for you. And as we may have heard from that little intro at the start, we are checking out Striptease from 1996.
And listeners are probably thinking, why would you start off a new one with this? Well, before we had our break, I did recommend this film, and I think it's come to bite me. But anyway, we have to watch this film, so that leads us to why we're at Striptease for 1996.
Absolutely. Now, I will also mention, if this is the first time you listen to it, there will be spoilers. So if you don't want a 24-year-old movie to be spoiled for you, then you probably should watch it before listening to this podcast. And look, if that's your bag, no judgment on this end. You know, I can understand people get quite picky about spoilers. I had something spoiled for me today that many people would think would be very minor, but I was still angry. So I respect if you don't want it spoiled, please stop listening right now. Go find a copy of Striptease and then come back to us, okay?
Deal? Good luck finding that copy, but hey, it's out there.
I think when we when you originally suggested it quite some time ago, it was currently on Australian Netflix, but it's since disappeared from there. So yeah, you are on your own with this one. So if you haven't seen Striptease and you want to know what it's about, I've got a synopsis here pulled straight from IMDb. A stripper and single mother gets dragged into a dangerous situation after a congressman takes a fancy to her.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, nice simple synopsis. It's nice to see. Whether it reflects what the movie actually is, that's a different matter, but we'll get to that.
Look, I do remember, like, I've got in the wake of, like, Showgirls, which, you know, as we know now, is that so bad it's good cult classic from 1994, 95, I think we got it in Australia. But Striptease very much represented that sort of period where, you know, in the 90s we were getting those sort of, I suppose what you call erotic sex thrillers, you know, along the lines of Basic Instinct and Body of Evidence. So I suppose even though Striptease is supposed to be more of a, I suppose, a comedy, which we will get to, whether whatever camp it actually does fit into, but it very much fitted into that sort of period. And as I said, I do remember when this came out, and it was quite a big deal that Demi Moore was taking off her gear.
Absolutely. And yeah, so, I mean, I must admit it caught my curiosity at the time, but I never actually got around to watching it until I watched it for this podcast. So
the things I make you do.
I know, it took me 24 years to get to it. There you go.
I read a funny review saying, this movie, I think, made its money back on video because no one wanted to admit to ever seeing it in a cinema. And I'm like, I think that might have been the case.
Potentially. But we'll get to the trivia and review in a second. But what I thought we'd look at first is see if it actually got any actual any awards out there. And I'm having a look at the list here. Well, let's just say none of the more prestigious awards are mentioned here, but there's quite a few Razzies. In the year 2000, it was nominated for Worst Picture of the Decade. In 1997, it won the Razzies for Worst Picture for Michael Abel, Worst Actress for Demi Moore, Worst Screen Couple of Demi Moore and Burt Reynolds, Worst Director, Andrew Bergman, Worst Screenplay, Andrew Bergman, Worst Original Song, Marvin Smokey Montgomery for the song Pussy, 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 Who's Kitty Cat Are You?, and was also nominated for Worst Supporting Actor for Burt Reynolds.
I'm surprised there wasn't an award in there for any time an actress is seen with a pair of boobs. I don't know. It seemed like one of those things. But I may be wrong. So you said it did win the Best Picture of the Razzies. But I believe I thought it lost to Island of Dr. Moreau. I may be wrong. It had some stiff competition that year.
Yeah, it was quite a yeah, well, an interesting year. Now, it also did quite well, if you want to put it that way, at the Stinkers Award, getting the Stinker Award for Worst Picture and nominees for both Demi Moore and Burt Reynolds. And the Yoga Awards gave it the Worst Foreign Actress for Demi Moore. I'm not too sure where the word Yoga Awards are done, but obviously they're not American.
Well, what I find really interesting is the movie cost $50 million and made $113 million. And as we've always said, $50 million times two by the marketing. So it cost, say, $100 million and it made $113 million. And interestingly, $13 million was how much Demi Moore was paid to play the part. So pretty much there's all their profit gone. And I believe at the time, it probably doesn't seem hard for people to believe now, but at the time it was the highest paid, I believe, for an actress or an actor in general at that point. So for her to be demanding $12.5 million for her part was, yeah, a big deal.
Absolutely. Now, you've already covered the budget and the box office for me there. Thank you for that.
That's all right.
Let's go into our turkey trivia. Now, this one is actually rated 4.5 out of 10 on IMDb. So it's around that middle of the range, which can be interesting sometimes. But I dug up a few extra bits of trivia. This actually underwent last-minute editing when preview audiences laughed at the wrong parts.
That can do it.
Yeah, I think that's not meant to be funny. I know. The little girl who plays Demi Moore's daughter in the movie is her real-life daughter, Rumor Willis.
And it's funny because I've seen her in things since and she doesn't look anything like that little girl. but it might have been a bit cheaper having her in it. I'm not sure.
Potentially. Burt Reynolds based his character and performance on real-life politicians he had known from his early years through his police chief father in Florida.
Okay.
And Michael Caine, Gene Hackman, and Donald Sutherland all turned down the role of David Dilbeck.
You're not giving too much away, but probably could have been a wise decision. I'm not sure. That said, Michael Caine has appeared in a few other redeeming features, so anything's possible.
Very, very true. Michael Caine is, infamous for basically, I think he said of Jaws 4, which we, of course, watched, was the reason he signed up, because it was a free trip to the Bahamas.
And I think I read, well, what do you think of the movie? And he goes, I don't care. I see the house every day, though, and it's great.
I see the pool aboard me, yes.
Yeah.
Now, before we talk too much more about the movie, and we have, I suppose, if you are a returning listener, we have rejigged it a bit, and we'll get to that in a moment, but we still need to work out our baseline. So this is the Redeeming Features podcast, so we need to work out what we're working from. So I went to Amazon and I found this review. The title is Can't Figure Out What It Wants to Be. First half is a drama, second half is slapstick comedy. Both halves are awful. What are we supposed to make of a movie when the people who made it can't figure out what it's supposed to be? If you want to watch a good drama with Demi Moore, try A Few Good Men or G.I. Jane. This one, 1 star.
Gosh, I can't believe they're even recommending G.I. Jane as an alternative. But yeah, that is a low review.
Absolutely. Now, with this, instead of just, I suppose, what we used to do is we basically would ramble about the movie and just talk about it in a methodical, if slightly random way. So instead, I thought what we could do was focus on a few bits and pieces. So what I've done is, whilst watching the movie, I picked out a few awards of my own, shall we say, to assign to it. Now, these are completely arbitrary. They can go one way or the other. And a few, I suppose, are more focused than others. But right from the outset, I gave the misogynist award straight away to the judge ruling that Demi Moore's character can't keep her daughter because she doesn't have a job, even though her husband is a known felon.
Yeah, and considering then, as we see, sort of like as the time goes on, this father is definitely not any kind of model citizen. But I know what you mean. From that outset, it's very much, you know, well, they don't waste time getting into it, but it's really just like, you know, you can't have custody of the daughter. Scene of strip club. Almost like they're just trying to just show possibly that these parents are the worst of all time.
Well, even without them, I mean, the judge is going on along the lines of, you know, you're just a woman, you can't look after her if you don't have a job, you know, maybe you should try typing or something like that. Just all this, straight from the outset, just piling on all this misogynistic drivel. And my wife Susie was watching with me at the time, and she was just like going, oh, she was getting worked up at this guy.
Well, we're talking about misogynistic, and pretty much straight after that scene, you've got the carload of drunk men crashing the Eager Beaver nightclub. Again, actually, Trevor, this is probably what I'd say. The cliche award goes to this movie. Every bloody cliche they could throw in the book. It's almost like they watch Showgirls. Well, I did hear that Demi Moore apparently studied or went along to strip clubs for about a year or so and learnt how to pole dance and learnt behind the scenes. But it's like they've almost taken the Showgirls guide to what a strip club's about and thrown in every possible cliche they can, you know, because we're taken straight from that court scene to carloads of drunk men crashing a party for their bachelor party. You know, it just seemed at the Eager Beaver nightclub, I just thought, oh gosh, how obvious is this movie going to be?
Yeah, and there was even about the Eager Beaver, there was even a bit where Demi Moore comes up and she's showing off, she holds up like the napkins and some, and the coasters and just going, you've got to get rid of these, they're sexist. Oh, and he's just, and it's like, what is even that? The place is called the Eager Beaver, there's a big neon sign up the top.
And especially when you've got the guys at the back, because there's always those obligatory backstage scenes where they're telling the strippers to go out, your number's on, again, taken out of the Showgirls 101 book. But, and yeah, these guys are really just as you said, the most chauvinistic of all time. So really, they're not caring about the women. It's just about as much money as they can make. And, you know, go out there, your song. What does one guy go? Oh, that's right, to Demi Moore when she was talking. I think it might have been during the napkins bit. And he goes, get out there. I can't make money on an empty stage. So, you know, it is just a big moneymaker thing. But what I find really interesting, Trevor, is, and of course we know that Demi Moore's the star, but have you noticed that her routines always had to be the ones that stopped the whole show? There've been girls performing all night, but as soon as Demi Moore comes out, oh, everyone fixes their tie and one guy combs his hair back. And of course, yeah. An Annie Lennox or Eurythmics song came on. I don't know if you gathered that from pretty much every routine she did. I'm glad they kept a bit of a standard with that. But yeah, you got to the point where you're like, I wonder what Annie Lennox song she's going to come out with next.
Yeah, and indeed, that's why I gave the What Did I Sign Up To award to Annie Lennox for the use of her music through all the strip scenes. And then over the closing credits, we get the Eurythmics Missionary Man.
I know. So, yes, probably not the most appropriate. I was worried.
So Annie Lennox definitely, I don't know if she knew what she was signing up to originally. Apparently the original novel's quite gritty and very serious. So maybe Annie Lennox was pitched something a bit more artistic, shall we say.
Were you, so you were mentioning you mentioned the original book it was based on, is that what you said?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, interesting you say that because I have read that the original book was gritty but also quite a black comedy, and that's often why I think, we'll obviously get to that, but the tone in this movie is a bit all over the place. Like, it didn't quite know how to kind of balance the whole satire of it. Like, that's the thing, are you trying to be a sexy satire or a thriller with a mystery element, you know? But we'll throw a strip scene in there just to flesh it out a little bit more. more, excuse the pun. But yeah, so I think Annie Lennox was probably going in, and apparently the book is quite good, and half the plot or three quarters of the plot isn't even in the movie. So, you know, I think she was probably going off that. And I did Google it a bit, and most of it seemed to be from her Diva album from 1992, her first solo album. So maybe she was just keen to have it all in a movie.
quite possibly. And while we're on music, just to change the tone a bit, I completely lost it. There's a point where she's trying to find her her ex-husband because he's decided to move and not give the new phone number so that Demi can't call to speak to her daughter. The ex-husband is played by Robert Patrick. You may know him as the liquid metal Terminator from Terminator 2, or the bad guy from Double Dragon.
I just went Dexter's dad, if you're thinking more modern.
So she steals the phone bill from her ex-sister-in-law after finding out that he's been making collect calls to her. And then she's in a car park and this deadly serious dramatic music, like some of the most dramatic music I had heard to that point, started playing as she opens the envelopes and looks at the bill. What even is that? So that scene got the Dramatic Music Award.
Considering at that point, I think they just pretty much said, look, they didn't hold back with the stripper scenes. Like, admittedly, in the first part of the movie, it was like they threw all that in and then the plot decided to come through. But I don't know if it was just me, Trevor. Obviously, subplots can exist in a movie and they can all be sort of tied up at the end, even badly. But I just felt that this was trying to be three different movies at the same time. You had the congressman who we find out, the Burt Reynolds character, who at first I was like, who is that? Oh, it's Burt Reynolds, because he was very disguised. But then we find out that's the whole point. I was going to say, yeah, so you've got very much the whole congressman story, and then you've got her with the whole custody of the daughter, and then you've got one of the patrons, I think, of the guy I mentioned earlier that was fixing up his tie and all that when Demi came out to perform. He was found dead later on and happened to float into the... Yeah, that was quite appropriate. Floated into the police guy's lagoon or whatever you could call it. And I think even he goes, oh, why does this always happen to me? Or something like that. Again, fitting in that tone of a black comedy, which Demi just doesn't... I don't think Demi got the memo about that. That's what I always worry about with this. You know, it seemed like... Someone said to me ages ago, or I have referred to movies to me and said, oh, have you ever watched a movie and half the actors think they're in a different movie to the other people? And I've never quite understood until I watched this film. And like, so you said with the whole serious music and all that, and it was just hard because you'd be you'd have a previous scene with a girl dancing with a python and having a bit of fun, or a girl dressed as a baby and doing a stripper routine, and then, as you said, cutting to a scene of her dramatically opening the envelope. So I don't know, it like that first review you read out, it never really knew what tone it wanted to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I would say that I found surprising was that, like, when everything was about the stage and with everything on the audience, it was quite sleazy. My wife, who does burlesque dancing, did appreciate some of the routines and said she got a few ideas from it. But when you went backstage, particularly backstage, they didn't take any crap from the owner of the club. And the bouncer, Shad the bouncer, he stood out for me because he showed respect and care for all the dancers, stood up for them the entire time. And the dancers themselves were like very supportive of each other and very much focused on helping each other, and particularly helping Demi when she became the Mother of the Year award by bringing her own daughter to a strip club.
Oh, yeah,
they all chipped in to help care for the daughter as well. So in a way, I've got to say there's a bit of a positive thing with regards to the portrayal of the strippers themselves, just when they were, I suppose, being them. It could have easily, because like you say, with showgirls, when you went behind the scenes, it was all backstabbing and sexy shenanigans and trying to outdo each other and trying to make sure the other one falls over and breaks their ankle so you can take their place. Here, it was really positive, and I've had that quite refreshing.
And that's the thing, like even in the later scenes, I know we said about anyway, it's not a spoiler as such, but later on in the sort of finale when you've got Rumor Willis, I'm going to call her, but the little girl, was going to say, it's sort of taken under the wing by the two strippers. I hate even calling them that because by that stage, you know, they've proven themselves as more than that, you know, and it sort of becomes a real family. And yeah, even just the whole thing is as soon as someone starts to get a bit touchy-feely on the stage towards the girl, like there's that guy in the opening scene that gets up and starts dancing, and actually that's a bad example because Burt Reynolds ends up coming in and breaking the bottle. But there are other times when Ving Rhames as a security guard is straight there to protect them, and you know, and Demi would always just go, no, you're not supposed to be doing that, and yeah, really just didn't allow it, and the men never allowed it to be it's making money, let's just do it. So I appreciated that. And whenever it did show, like later on in the scenes where Demi had to sort of do one-on-ones with Burt Reynolds' character sort of to try and get, you know, to try and, you know, save her daughter as such, she was really just doing it to, you know, she had her goal in mind. She kept her head above water, you know, and knew that she was doing it. And that's the thing, like, knew that she was doing it the whole time for her daughter. You know, that was the only thing that mattered. But you did mention how the daughter came to the strip club. But, yeah, the scene with her looking through the curtain at her mum taking her top off was a bit weird for me. But anyway...
Yeah. And then the whole like guilt trip that she had afterwards, I thought was very heavily laid on. She was saying, oh no, she saw me, whatever will she think of me, when the rest of the time, for a lot of it, like the actual strippers, I'll switch over, because Shad himself, when some of the cronies of Burt Reynolds refer to him as strippers, he goes, hey, exotic dancers! Despite the fact that, you know, I feel these exotic dancers are portrayed in quite a positive light. And then you have Demi just tearing herself apart about how bad she was because she let her daughter see what she did.
Mm.
Again, seemed to be coming again from two different movies.
Again, that should probably been the exotic dancers at the back probably should have been stopping the daughter from having a look through the curtain, but that's all right. They were doing their best. But I think there's even a part in the finale where they go, you're just a stripper. And Demi goes, what did you call me? So even by then, yeah, we'd seen them as more than that, because again, going from those opening scenes where they just kind of threw us strip scene after strip scene, I'm glad that we were able to realize they were more than that. And one thing I read a little bit, and I'm not saying I got influenced by reviews, but a lot of people said the characters are very much, aside from Demi, who's again in a totally different movie, I think, being very serious, but a lot of the characters are real caricatures. You just have to look at you mentioned the family of the father who'd taken the daughter, where they go and get that envelope, and you know, of course they had to be the most bogan or yokel people that you could find. Like, it was just so like they had to go just the real obvious, and even the Burt Reynolds as a congressman seemed to fit such a caricature of what they kind of, or what we see anyway, or what we think we see about political people, where it's like they've got this, you know, this whole backstory about, oh, I went to a strip club, try to cover it over, but I'm doing a big rally for Christians today. And I must admit, mm-hmm. Burt Reynolds did do a great job, and you could tell he was having a lot of fun with it, even though he probably didn't have too much to work with this movie.
I don't know. Burt Reynolds, he got so many nods. I mean, that accent he was doing, I wasn't too sure what it was, that toupee, I didn't know what that was meant to be, but it was interesting in a way. He definitely had the greasiest performance of the movie, quite literally, when his assistant walks in him wearing a cowboy hat, boxer shorts, a vest covered in Vaseline, and just listening before he's meant to go and talk to the young Christians of America. And then when he goes out to talk to them, they're all shaking his hand. And I will give them, the movie makers, is as people shake his hand, they take their hand away and they look at their hand and like wipe it on their themselves, because it's obviously still greasy from the Vaseline. So I thought, okay, I'll pay that.
But there's something that still did seem something awkward about those last scenes where Demi's like doing the private show for him. It just literally felt like Burt Reynolds was getting just a private show from Demi Moore, and oh, heaven forbid the cameras are there. But yeah, he was having a good time, and it was happy to, I'm sure he was happy to have her dance in front of hours on end.
So yeah, and again, that again showed Demi really taking charge when he started trying to get too touchy-feely and Shad wasn't there. They sort of showed that, you know, she had what it took to sort of, like, you know, push him back down, push him back with his boot. I think it would be one time she basically stomped on his hand to basically, you know, say, you know, if you want this, these are my rules and you don't get to break them, which again is takes away some of the sleaziness of some of the Eager Beaver scenes.
Mm. And I do also wonder if a lot of that did come from her doing research into that world. You know, she you know, you could tell that she knew a little bit more about this sort of stuff and was, I know, she was also getting a bigger paycheck, which I wonder if she was acting her heart out. But yeah, I did appreciate that because she had to be the character that had that strength, I suppose, because unfortunately the rest of the exotic dancer characters were very much caricatures and weren't really developed much. But look, it's probably not something I should laugh about, but you just had to see a situation where you had this one stripper that I think, I can't remember what her name is, but she ends up getting brought into the fold. There's always a new stripper that starts on the night of the movie. and she ends up doing a routine with a python, and I'm like, this isn't going to end well. And I think they brought it back a couple of times, and I shouldn't laugh, but one of the final scenes, she kind of has an accident with the python. But again, all the girls are straight around her protecting her, but I just loved those little elements where it just kind of, it had that real realism about it. You know, these sort of things can happen. You're performing with a snake, so it was very jarring seeing those sort of comedy bits versus, you know, Demi Moore acting her heart out, you know, and also things like Ving Rhames with his little monkey. Like, I don't know, why do these guys always have to have a pet monkey? But they seem to, they add good value, trust me. You know, there always has to be, and of course, anytime there's reference to breasts, the monkey has to cover its eyes, or I think in one scene it hides behind a bra. So they definitely got their mileage out of that.
They pretty much ran with anything they thought would work. But, I mean, we haven't even touched on, I suppose, Amanda Santé. I mean, we mentioned him briefly, but, you know, Amanda Santé, again, was in a different movie. Again, researching all these, like, these murders that happen every time something comes out that could threaten Burt Reynolds, these shady mob guys obviously step in. That didn't make too much of a secret of it, I guess. But I mean, I think he stepped in and he was very respectful to Demi and very respectful to the girls and worked very closely with Shad, with Vin Rhymes. But then he lost points for being a decent role model in this movie when towards the end of the movie he decides to take off to confront the bad guys, these mobsters on their boat. And not only does he bring two of the dancers along, he brings along Rumor Willis as well.
That's right.
To a crime scene.
And that's the scene I was mentioning earlier. Where, yeah, that's right. He goes, oh, we'll be fine. I think he even says a line, yeah, we'll be fine. We've got two strippers and a little girl. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, is that really appropriate?
But before, up to that point, he was like very much on business and very serious and taking statements and working with everyone. And it's like, why did you suddenly break this character? Oh, that's right. This is meant to be a comedy. So I thought they must have needed a funny bit by that point.
And that's what I felt very much about the finale. Again, it was one of those movies that still, I feel like this with most movies, but it seems like it's, okay, this has gone on for long enough. How long has it got to go? Half an hour. But I still felt very much by the time we got to the finale, they're almost trying to make it as comic as they can tie up all these, like I said earlier, all these subplots that have all sort of come to a head, you know, with Burt Reynolds and all the other bits. But I felt that as a result, you know, one shooting and then you had Ving Rhymes to the side. I don't know. It didn't know whether it wanted to be a comedy crime caper and just forget about the last hour and a half that we'd already watched. I don't know. So it may have been more in the feel of the movie. I mean, sorry, in the book. So I don't know. But the ending just felt very much like it was, I suppose, rushed or, yeah, again, not fitting in with the rest of the film or just trying to tie it up as soon as we can.
Well, I mean, there was that convenient thing where after Shad breaks Robert Patrick's arm protecting Demi. Go, I like Shad. I will give a special mention to Shad the Bouncer. He was probably one of my highlights of the movie.
Oh, he was.
And he goes to his sister-in-law who only has morphine for her pet wolves. So he takes like a whole bottle of that. And then he just turns into a completely different slapstick character who has no idea what he's doing, just does all these comic japeries, and which are also kind of serious at the same time. I don't know. It's just very odd that the character basically completely changes and he's so out of it that he just signs a daughter over after this whole stuff trying to set up a whole courtroom drama almost.
Yeah, and I think it even leads to, doesn't Demi pretty much just go, you will, because he's so out of it, you will agree to give back my daughter. Yes, I will, you know, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it seems very appropriate that he happened to have all that wolf medication. Just before the finale, which, yeah, it seemed quite convenient. As you said, kind of changed the character completely. It would have been a totally different movie if he hadn't had that. And the ending would have been something totally different, I think.
Indeed. But he did get, you know, he did get to essentially trap the bad guys when he presses a button, think it's a coffee machine in a sugar factory. He just goes, I want my coffee black, no sugar. Presses a button, releases a big pile of sugar on the bad guys to save everyone at the last minute, and goes, hey, I said no sugar.
Yes, they've gone that angle.
What are you trying to be? You've stopped making, well, I don't know if you made much sense in the first place, but you certainly have stopped making sense by this point.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing, like, this movie is so unsure about what it wants to target. And I read another review, which I thought was quite clever, which just said, you know, from one minute you've got scenes with naked women that's obviously appealing to, I don't know, teenage boys and a male audience. And then 2 seconds later, you've got a real lovey-dovey scene with the mum and the daughter about how much they want to... I don't know who this is supposed to target. And again, that's probably a big reason for why people didn't see this in the cinema and probably on VHS was more just to see what they're missing out on or they might see some boobs.
Potentially. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think, I know I made that gag in the opening, but definitely the movie's shows the boobs, but at least it's not about the boobs. So that's something else I think we can say about it.
Yeah.
Even though it definitely can't make up its own mind. Now, what we're going to do is probably wrap up our little chat there. We are trying to keep this a bit tighter and focus on a few key bits and pieces, which means we need to move on to work out if this movie is actually in any way redeemable or has any redeeming features. So, Christian, you did pick this movie, so if you don't mind, I shall go first.
No worries.
Excellent. Well, as we have clearly covered over, this movie just didn't know what it wanted to be. I mean, there was a family drama and courtroom drama with a custody battle, strippers, exotic dancers, sorry, Shad, with Hearts of Gold, screwball comedy with whatever Burt Reynolds was trying to pull off and Robert Patrick after he took the animal morphine, or there was a whole crime drama with what was going on with Armand Asante. I mean, the inconsistency of the tone almost seemed to help out because it actually made the better moments, and there were some better moments in there. They stood out even more in the chaos, I think. It was better than I expected, but I went in with extremely low expectations, so I guess that just really raised it to that troublesome line for me. You know that line in the middle, Christian? That's where I was with this one. So really, I think, given the positive portrayal of the dancers and the support they gave each other in this movie, when it could have easily gone full sleaze, is probably the most redeeming feature. I'm very disappointed, though, that there wasn't, I suppose, a resolution where Demi just goes, you know what, I shouldn't be ashamed of being an exotic dancer. Because to me, it seemed to be pointing in that direction, but it never actually got there. It just finished with her in the back of the police car with her daughter. Hooray, the end, they're all happy. But again, I think the portrayal of the dancers and that support and that positive portrayal of exotic dancing and that side of the sex industry, I think that's just enough to make this movie redeemable.
Wow. So yeah, redeemable. Wow, right on the line there, Trevor, but still redeemable. And yeah, I do agree with a lot of the points you said, and I really appreciate the... Not saying, no, I know you didn't say this, but we won't go ahead saying it's a feminist film that's supporting women, but I'm glad that it's got those elements in there. Look, I think for me, I'd have to judge it very much based on its enjoyable factor, and you know, I hate comparing it to other films, but this movie's never going to be fun enough to reach the same sort of cult heights as Showgirls and other those so bad it's good, dare I say it. You know, it's just not enjoyable enough, and I think the biggest problem is the tone. Like, a lot of the critics said that Demi Moore was the worst actress in the whole thing, and I think got the Raspberry Award. But honestly, Demi Moore did a great job. She was just acting in the wrong movie. She seemed to be taking it all so seriously while everyone else seemed to be in a totally different movie. Again, highlighting almost these caricatures. Nothing wrong with that, but I think if they'd maintained that sort of pace and that sort of, I suppose, black comedy throughout, it would have made a lot more sense. I actually, you know, I felt that the film was very fleshed out with musical numbers. I could say musical numbers, but, you know, exotic dancer scenes. Hey, some of these could have been starting to, I don't know, comment on some of the stuff that's happening, you know, one of the routines, rather than just being sort of thrown in there. So I think that could have been thought about more rather than just throwing in a strip scene just for the sake of it. So really, this could have been a fun comedy crime caper, and you know I love, probably my favorite parts would be Burt Reynolds. He had such a great time. Great soundtrack. I love Annie Lennox in the Eurythmics, so I really didn't mind. I don't think I'll be able to look at some of those same songs the same way ever again. And of course, Ving Rhames as Monkey, we can't say no to that. But I definitely would have to go, look, Trevor, it's one of those ones I can't even put it over the line. I don't think this was enjoyable enough to be redeemable, and I'm gonna have to say irredeemable. Sorry.
That is fine. So a split decision, which means if you want to know if it's redeemable for you, then you guys watch it for yourself. Sorry. That's the way it goes.
Yes, I'm not watching it now, again.
Fair enough. Now, I do have some bonus thoughts. I did put the request out on Facebook if anybody had any redeeming features or otherwise for this movie. So Jade got in touch with us. Thank you, Jade. Her redeeming feature is Demi Moore. And Susie, my wife Susie, after watching it, said, I actually didn't mind it. It has drama, it has comedy, it has bad toupees. I'll censor this next bit in line. It has all sorts of messed up stuff. I can let you redo that with the way you like. With a heart of gold. So a couple of positive thoughts there from Facebook. So thank you for that.
Very good. So we survived.
We did survive, but of course the title of this podcast is Redeeming Features, so we do like to leave on a high note. So I went back to Amazon and I found another review to finish off. Okay, so this one's titled, Okay, What's Not to Love About This Flick? And about four question marks afterwards. Demi Moore's enhanced figure, smiling Mickey face, and Burt Reynolds, R.I.P. Burt, standing there all greased up from head to toe with Vaseline. LMFMFAO! Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Dead snakes, live snakes! Ving Rhames as a somewhat sensitive bouncer off the Eager Beaver strip club. Amanda Sante rounding out the bill. Yep, this is a really fun flick to watch even in mixed company. Too funny, 5 stars.
Oh well, each to their own.
Absolutely. As we always say, you can enjoy whatever you like to enjoy, even if you're wrong. But can't really say that in this case because we have come to different conclusions.
Exactly. And I'm the one who suggested it, so I should be feeling bad.
No problem at all. Like I said earlier on, no judgments. We take what we get and we go with what we've got. But I think that can bring the conversation about striptease to a nice close, and we need to look at what our next movie will be.
Ooh.
And since you picked striptease, it's my turn, Christian.
Uh-oh.
Now, this is a request from a listener, Leo in Connecticut. He dropped us an email quite some time ago, back in the old Rufus Project podcast days, more on that in a bit. So sorry for taking so long, Leo. I'm really, really, really sorry. But what we are doing is we are heading to the year 2000 to check out a box office bomb that barely made back its meager $25 million budget. It also stars an actor who has featured in two of our previous podcasts, one for an absolutely irredeemable movie and the other for probably one of the best movies we checked out that particular year. So I guess this is the tiebreaker. We are checking out the Rupert Everett and Madonna movie, The Next Best Thing.
Well, 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 I'm keen to revisit this again. I have seen it a couple of times, but you've always got me in a Madonna movie, so interesting.
Excellent. All good. Now, I have checked, and sorry, guys, it does not appear to be available to stream in Australia, where we are, but I'm guessing overseas listeners like Leo probably have a few more options than we do. It's getting better in Australia, honestly, but we've still got a long way to go.
And I know it is probably a harder one to find, but it's out there somewhere.
Absolutely. These things can always be found, and so... off you go. Or if perhaps you have watched it and you do remember it, have fond thoughts or otherwise, we do, of course, want to hear about it from you. So if you've got any thoughts on the next big thing, or if you think we were too harsh or too generous on striptease, definitely get in touch with us. You can find our podcast page at The Rufus Project Presents. For that again, the Rufus Project Presents page, the new home for the Rufus Project podcast, being redeeming features and what the history at the moment. More on that later. You can leave a comment below this very episode. You can find us with the Rufus Project Presents Facebook page, or you can send us an email to redeeming@rufusproject.com. So it's nice and easy to get in touch with us, and we would love to hear your thoughts or opinions.
Yeah, definitely. And there's plenty of other movies out there too, so we always look forward to your recommendations. Or, yeah, as you said, if we were too harsh on these movies.
Absolutely. So sorry for garbling that information there. I'm a little out of practice. I will get better, I promise.
You did well.
Thank you very much. So from there, before I suppose I start doing the full-on plugs for all the podcasty fun you can have with Rufus Project Presents, Christian, I understand that you might put on the odd event around Brisbane, Australia, so I was wondering if you had anything coming up.
Yes, we are featuring yours truly and another podcast person. We have the Interactive Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is coming up on the 27th of March. Now, we've been doing that at the Chanel Theatre for almost 20 years, and it could be possibly our last year of performing at the Chanel. Don't worry, the Rocky Horror cast aren't going anywhere, but probably elsewhere in terms of a new home, but this could be one of your last chances to experience the Rocky Horror Picture Show in an interactive setting with over 400 other fans. So head to christianfletcher.com for all of my upcoming events, and there's still a few more things in the pipeline, but I've been a bit quiet of late while I get some things organized, but I'm not going anywhere soon. So in the meantime, check out Rocky Horror, and there'll be more things announced in the next couple of months.
Excellent. And I will, of course, have a link to Christian Fletcher's event page down in the podcast description down below. Now, while you're down there, there's going to be some other links there. Of course, there will be the link to the Rufus Project Presents homepage, where you can find, our previous, crossover episode between the Rufus Project podcast and Redeeming Features, I think you can call it, where I did a bit of a cut-down version of a chat about Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. There is also a link to the full Rufus Project podcast archives on archive.org. So there's a lot to listen to there, and a lot of movies, both bad and good, that Christian and I have covered in 5 years of doing this. 5 years plus.
Oh, and a lot of them I've spent 5 years trying to suppress the memory of having watched it. So, but there have been some good ones there.
Yeah, so indeed, I do intend to bring back the list of movies to the Rufus Project Presents homepage. I haven't quite got there yet. So if you do make a suggestion and we'll say, sorry, we've already done that, I apologize in advance. Now, if you do want to check out other podcasts, we also have the What the History podcast that I do with my wonderful wife, Susie. That's where we talk about bits of bizarre history to make you say, what the history? So that can be found on rufusproject.com, or you can head to the What the History Facebook page. There's even a What the Historian Facebook chat group, if you would like to find that. And we've recently set up a What the History Instagram, where we share random history that we find. And at the moment, I'm trying to do a On This Day Strange History Fact. So it's definitely a good time to check out that Instagram account.
I'll definitely recommend it.
It's good fun. And I'm probably looking at putting redeeming features on Instagram at some point. But there's a few things still coming in the future. But the best bet is to keep an eye on the Rufus Project on Facebook for more announcements as we go. I think that's it.
You didn't sound out of practice to me.
All good. So Also on that homepage are all the links to subscribe to this podcast, to the What the History podcast, on Apple Podcast, on Spotify, or through your favorite podcast app. We would very much like if you did subscribe and review us. If you like what you heard, that would always be nice because it helps. Apparently that's how podcasts rebuild, and we do have to do a bit of rebuilding with this one. So any help you can provide is much appreciated on that side of things. I'm going to stop now. I think I have rabbited on long enough. So thank you for listening. We should be back in about a month to discuss the next best thing from the year 2000. Oh, what have I gotten this into? I don't know. I watched the trailer and I was disturbed. So this should be
Hey, you suggested it. I have sat through it a few times in the past, so I'm not going in blind, but I'm not going to say anything.
Well, Leo suggested it, so there you go.
Oh, okay.
At least I've got Thanks, somebody Leo. Else to blame. But we will be back, hopefully, in about a month with another Redeeming Features podcast. So until then, enjoy watching whatever you enjoy watching, and we will see you next time. Farewell.
Hello?
He's leaving me.
Oh, don't stop him. Just let him go, Abby.
And then what?
Rush over to my house and tell me all about it.
I can't imagine any man letting you slip through his fingers. You're the only woman in the world that I would like to be.
Ow.
Robert, look at me. I'm not 24 anymore.
I'm not even 34 anymore, so what?
1989. Maybe I'd like to have a family before it's too late. 1999.
You don't need to have a man to have a child. This is the 21st century.
I have something to tell you.
Is it bigger than the Brit Box?
Not yet. Robert's moving in with me, and we're going to raise the baby together.
What?
Who's the father?
Actually, it's me.
So your biological time clock is ticking, that's it.
Robert is the most incredible man. We're never getting married, so we can't get divorced.
Having a child stops you from worrying about yourself. There's something more important than you in the world.
The world out there does not always support families that are different.
Why don't you sleep in Mommy's room?
She snores. She snores like a great big old helicopter taking
I have a date.
What?
I have a date. Woo!
Woo! Are you two ever together?
We're best friends. Robert's my family.
He's been my daddy now.
What?
I think you're great, Dad. I just want us all to get along.
The last thing we want to do is hurt you.
Sam is my son, forever and always.
Hi, is Abby here?
Come in.
But it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.